On this episode of The Playbook, I have Brian Scudamore, founder and CEO of O2E Brands and author of WTF, Willing to Fail. And you're going to learn about the pipe to happiness. Join me for all of this and more on The Playbook.
This is Entrepreneurs The Playbook, where each week I bring you some of the greatest athletes, celebrities, and entrepreneurs to talk about their personal and professional playbook to success and what made them champions on the field and in the boardroom. I'm your host, David Meltzer.
I have a legend. That's right, a true entrepreneur, Brian Scudamore, founder and CEO of O2E Brands, and now also an author. Welcome to The Playbook, Brian.
Awesome, Dave. Thanks for having me. Happy to be here. And I know we've got lots of stuff in common and a shared passion for business. So excited to chat.
You know, it's so unbelievable how you attract the right people into your lives. And then you realize the right people in your lives are doing the same things that you're doing. And one of the things, you know, doing due diligence on you that I didn't know is you're a corporate culture person based off of happiness. And you probably know, or maybe don't know, that my main mission in life is to empower over a billion people to be happy. And starting with the people that are living with me and working with me, you know, where did your desire and simplification of happiness start in incorporating it into your business culture?
Well, it's interesting. So I'm a Canadian entrepreneur, but I was born in San Francisco. My grandparents had an army surplus store in a dodgy end of town. And I used to go work in that surplus store every summer, every Christmas holiday, everything I could. And what was interesting, they were surrounded by stores that were robbed constantly. It was in a dodgy area of town and everyone was robbed by people all the time. But my grandparents weren't robbed and I could never understand why. And I started to realize it was how they treated people, not just their customers who came into the store, but the homeless or people just looking for an ear. People would come in and they'd ask for money and my grandparents wouldn't give them money, but they would give them an ear. They'd give them love. They'd give them a hug. And I was so inspired and I thought, wow, they had the word on the street for Lorber surplus was don't mess with the Lorbers. They don't need to be robbed. They got robbed twice in 20 years. And I think that what that did is left an impression on me that taking care of people, finding the right people in your company, taking care of them, they will in turn take care of the customer and the people in the community. Simple recipe, and it works for us.
It's a beautiful recipe combined with a couple of ingredients of kindness, which is overlooked and underestimated. And it seems to me, as I also look over some of, you know, your own cultural beliefs and values, that the simple idea of being kind also is very important. How is kindness relative to the culture and doing business?
Yeah, we were talking about it on a leadership team call today. Actually, the word kindness came up. It's that old golden rule, treat others as you'd like to be treated. So kindness, acceptance, we want greater diversity in our business, diversity of minds, opinions, diversity of cultures, because we just want this place where everything just fits and we can make everyone bigger and better together. And so a philosophy that I have in my business and what drives me, and I love seeing behind you, it says money can't buy happiness. And I know you said, well, some people like to shop. To me, I love building my business because I love watching things grow. I love people getting better. I love watching our systems get better. I love watching our culture get better. I want nothing more than the pride of owners, our franchise owners across any of our three brands, whether it's 1-800-GOT-JUNK, WOW One Day Painting, or Shack Shine. I want people to be happy, connected, having fun, and growing together. And so culture is the foundational element that I think makes that all possible.
And theoretically, this all sounds nice. And both of you have, both of us have run businesses with tons of employees and tons of overhead, which give a pragmatic challenge into leadership and having a certain leadership style to be kind and to be nice and yet to push people, because the apathy or the voids that are created, in my opinion, sometimes kindness and niceness can be mistaken for and taken advantage of in the business setting as a leader. What are some of the things in your leadership style that allow you to blend, you know, the motivation, the fierceness and ferociousness, the persistence that it takes to be successful, and the mistakes and the learning and the constructive criticism with this idea of kindness and happiness and a wonderful, abundant culture.
Yeah, and kindness doesn't mean that things are all rosy and always smiling. You know, we've got a very smiley, happy culture, but we take our business very seriously, not always ourselves. So we work hard, we play hard, we drive hard. But when you've got this culture of people being able to communicate together, that's when you have the freedom to have these open conversations and race to the conflict. You can be kind to someone, but you can also say, you know what, David, I think you might have made a mistake here. What could you have done differently? Something in our culture, and you talked about me writing a book. My book is called WTF, Willing to Fail. Not trying to plug my book, but the title is important because we've got this culture of being willing to fail, making mistakes, falling down, but figuring out how to get back up and learn. 2020, as we know, has been an incredible year of failures, of learning, of struggles. We make it okay for our people to make mistakes, but the most important question we ask is, what did you learn? What would you have done differently? How will you do better in the future? And so we've got a kind culture, but one of really direct communication to have a conversation when someone makes a mistake. And they know that, you know, you're not getting fired for a mistake. You're going to take that as an opportunity to allow us to get to a greater level of growth in our business.
And what are some of the other ways? I know within the book you talk about this too, and it reminded me of Zander's book when they talk about rule number 6, don't take yourself so seriously. And forgiveness is intertwined in that as well. But what other ways do you suggest people improve the working culture within these types of businesses?
Yeah, for me, two things I'd say. Number one is find the right people and treat them right. In 1994, 5 years into 1-800-GOT-JUNK, I fired my entire company of 11 people. One bad apple spoils the whole bunch. I had at least 9 bad apples. I took all 11 and just said, we're going to start again. And what I learned was really preserve the culture and find the people that really fit. People that are happy, professional, that share our values. The right people for us. And so I got very maniacal about who I brought into my business. And when we've got the wrong fit, we'll free them up for another opportunity. If they don't fit in our workplace, let's help them find a place where they do fit. The second thing is values. One day we went to a cottage that my parents had on the water, and we mapped out the leadership team at the time, about 8 people, 400 post-it notes describing words of who we were, not who we wanted to be. And we took all those words and they grouped into 4 categories. Passion, integrity, professionalism, and empathy. Pipe. Those are our values. They've never changed. They never will. So we hire and fire based on values. If we hire someone, we want to make sure they have all elements of pipe. If someone makes a mistake, including myself, I will have people call me out and say, Scudamore, you weren't very empathetic there. That wasn't very pipe. I'll say, wow, that's insightful. What could I have done differently? So it's really used as a way to call each other on our values to make sure we're making decisions that fit our way of doing things.
Oh, and I love that pipe attitude and that you use it and implement it in the company, and people even call you out on it, which gives me that definition of a true leader is an intelligent follower. And if people have comfort in being able to approach you, not only with the mistakes that they've made and be accountable, but also approach you with the mistakes that you've made and give their input on that as well. Now, both of us also share this unique entrepreneurial dream, which I believe has a common denominator of a desire. And this desire I see in millionaires, billionaires, entrepreneurs, celebrities, athletes, entertainers, and it's the desire that you must be what you can be. But in conflict with that desire to be or pursue your own potential comes a lot of mental perspective or attention on what's missing in my life, what I don't want in my life, or even worse, what other people want for me. And obviously you started 1-800-JUNK and had to restart it as well, you know, and taking, you know, one of my grandparents' favorite saying, which was one man's junk is another man's treasure. Sure. And making millions of dollars off of that. Good for you. But to that conflict, you know, how do you see being able to implement that type of philosophy into your own life of desire of to be what you with listening, but yet not letting your own attention to dispel or deter you. Because a lot of people in that 9 out of 11 situation would have just quit because they would have listened to everybody else. They'd have listened to their employees, their family, their friends, and not started over. You know, where was it within you to pursue your own potential?
Yeah, I just try and tap into my own heart and say, what do I want? And I'm a big list maker and I write down my goals and my dreams. We have something at O2E Brands that we call 101 Life Goals Program, where we help all of our employees identify up to 101 things that if we're aware of, we might be able to help them with some of those dreams. And so making dreams come true, you and I talked about going to Kenya and working with the WE Association. You know, we brought 10 people on actually three different trips, 30 people to Kenya to help build schools and do work in Africa. And it's unbelievable. So we want to uncover people's dreams. So it's me following my heart, but then understanding what's in the heart of my people. What do they want personally, professionally, and how can we use our size and scale as a business to help make those dreams a reality?
I love that so much because I think the greatest detriment to the businesses that I've run and grown are people are afraid to ask for help. Everyone, even the ones I didn't want in my business, loved to give. You know, it was something I could determine in the interview process and the historical view of who they were. But teaching people to receive was very difficult. And part of that energy comes with the ability to ask for help. How do you, besides the 101, you know, system that you have, how do you encourage people to be comfortable to ask for help? Because I think that's one of the key things that I see in your businesses that really have accelerated what you do.
Yeah, so our franchise owners, the way we make it happen with them, and I'll take Wow One Day Painting as an example, people were having trouble asking each other for help. And we said, listen, you have a bunch of people that are in the industry of painting homes in a day. They're in the same business, but in a different market. Call them up. Go visit their franchise. Ask them for help. So we formalized it by putting together a forum group of 8 people. We took 8 franchise owners and said, every quarter you will travel to someone's franchise. You will discuss, learn, open up the numbers, and so on. So we encourage them to ask for help, but then we give them a process as a way to ask for help. The number one organization I've ever been a part of is EO, the Entrepreneur Organization, similar to a YPO. And why I love that organization is because entrepreneurs solve problems. And every problem I've ever faced, when I'm hit with an obstacle, I pick up the phone and I call an EO member. I call someone like yourself. I call another entrepreneur and I learn and I say, hey, Dave, you've done this before. You mess this up. You learn from it. Teach me, show me, help me make a shortcut. And people need to have the guts to pick up the phone or go visit someone and say, I need some help. And human nature is, I'm sure you can relate to this, tell me if you don't, but as entrepreneurs, we like to help other entrepreneurs. When someone reaches out and says, Brian, I need some help here, give me some advice. We've been helped, we love to give back.
It's so true, and I teach people the same thing. Once you know your what, and you two here at O2E Brands, you really help people know their what, personally what they want, experientially what they want with your list, the giving side of what they want, and also this receiving side. But I love the fact that you subscribe to the easiest way to get to somewhere you want to go is to ask someone that's already there directions. And that's what EO provides. And, you know, I've participated in many EO speeches, organizations, groups, conferences, masterminds, et cetera. And it's extraordinarily valuable to everyone. Now, through your journey, you've had ups and downs. Mm-hmm. And most people talk about the great successes and you've had them. What was one of the biggest challenges that you faced and what'd you learn from it?
Yeah, I had I've had 3 COOs. I've got Eric Church today. Hopefully he'll be around forever. It's been 9 years and we've quadrupled the company together. But prior to him, I had a person that I brought in from Starbucks, an ex-Starbucks president of the US operations, wanted to move back home to Canada where our head office is. And I landed the jackpot pulling this person in. Within 14 short months, we almost bankrupted what I had built for 20 years. It was the financial meltdown and our revenues dropped by $45 million. But the vision that I saw and where I was going, along with my COO and where that person wanted to go, it's not like we were fighting, but we had slightly different places we were going. And day by day, the distance between us in where we saw the world grew. And it was hard. My franchise owners all thought this person was the right person, but I saw something they didn't see and had to let them go. And when I got them out of my business, it was a relief to me, and I knew it was going to be painful short term. My franchise partners didn't see it. They would say today, wow, one of the best decisions Brian made. But I think as leaders, we've got to see the forest for the trees. We've got to think ahead and make decisions way ahead of when our team sees that. So massive failure on my part, finding the wrong person, but it helped me be introspective and learn to figure out what I needed in the right person, Eric Church.
And taking into that consideration, your new CEO, who obviously you adore and has done an exceptional job, what do you think the distinctive property or characteristic that he has comparatively to the Starbucks CEO that came in?
Two things. One, he believes in entrepreneurs. I helped him realize, he didn't know this about himself, but every position he's ever had in life was working with an entrepreneur, someone as a second in command to be the implementer of the entrepreneur's vision. And so he believed in me like I believed in him. The second thing was, when I first was looking for him after my failure with the Starbucks person, is I took a sheet of paper and down one side, I wrote all the things I loved to do that I was great at in the business. On the other side, all the things I didn't like to do and was bad at. I said, I need to find someone that is good at the things I don't like to do and I'm bad at. And when I showed the list to Eric in our discussions and our courtship, he's like, I love that stuff, dude. I'm good at that stuff. And
too bad you couldn't marry him.
I know, right? Right?
Right. That's so wonderful. I love that because I have one of the best marriages in the world. And it's not just because my wife's blind and deaf. No, that's a joke. She hates when I tell it. But moreover, like, my strengths are absolutely her weaknesses. Yeah. And her weaknesses are my strength. And I look for that as well. Last question real fast, because I think one of the most overlooked things in success of being a leader within an organization with employees and franchises, et cetera, is engagement. And I think we downplay, just like we downplay credibility when we're talking, so many people overlook by overselling, back-end selling, lying, manipulating, and cheating, thinking that they haven't disturbed some part of their pitch or their sharing of a vision. Moreover, though, I see engagement as an easy way to be more successful. Because if you look at productivity mathematically, even if someone doesn't have the capabilities that other people have, if they stay engaged, for a longer percentage of a time, their capabilities are less important because of the actual attention that they're paying and the consistent behavior that they have. Mm-hmm. How have you utilized, because your franchisees and your employees seem so engaged, and it's something that I aspire and really focus in on. What's, you know, one of the key components to getting that type of engagement? I've seen statistics, by the way, and, you know, from the World Business Congress that 87% of the people are not engaged in a job that they have. Think about the productivity of the world if we could get people engaged like you get your people engaged.
Yeah. You know what? So I would agree with you. Most people are not engaged. In my companies, we're very lucky, but we're skillful. We're planful in how we find the right people. We hire engaged people. We find people that are already fired up. You know, that's the job of a parent, is you're raising kids who are going to be engaged in the world and motivated and passionate. I can't motivate people. I can inspire a little tiny bit, but I can't make them do things that they want to do. They have to come to us engaged and fired up. So franchise owners come to us and they say, hey, Brian, I like your proven recipe. You know how to give me a recipe to build a successful franchise. I've always wanted to run my own business. I didn't know where to start. And I ask them, what do you bring? What do you bring in attitude? If you don't know how to run a business and you've never done one, we can teach you. But what do you bring in terms of passion and attitude to our O2E Brands family that's going to make things better for everyone?
Well, Brian, I certainly appreciate you giving me the pipe to happiness.
Awesome.
Just an incredible lesson here on the playbook. Brian Scudamore, the founder and CEO of O2 Brands and an author of WTF, Not Utilized in the Same Manner.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of The Playbook as much as me. On a personal note, I just wanted to thank everyone for making The Playbook such a success. Don't forget to continue it by sharing, subscribing, and listening to your favorite episodes. This is Dave Meltzer with The Playbook.